We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
The Crisis Next Door, a weekly report on the biggest conflicts around the world. With host Jason Brooks.
Thanks for listening to The Crisis Next Door. I'm Jason Brooks. President Trump's decision to pull U.S. forces back from northern Syria has given the green light to Turkey to attack Kurdish positions, the latest convulsion in the more than eight-year-old Syrian civil war. Joining me to talk about the reversal of fortunes for the Kurds and what this means for U.S. foreign policy elsewhere is Stephen Cook, N.E. Enrico Mattei Senior Fellow for Middle East and Africa Studies at the Council on Foreign Relations. Stephen, thank you for joining The Crisis Next Door.
It's great to be with you, Jason.
Always good to have you back. Stephen, to put it bluntly, are the Kurds in Syria screwed without U.S. military protection?
In a way, they are. They are now confronting the power of NATO's second largest military in the Turkish Armed Forces. And they are relatively lightly armed. And have been fighting a guerrilla campaign, well, not really a guerrilla campaign, but fighting a campaign against the Islamic State for the better part of the last 5 years with the help of American Special Forces operators, but they hardly have the same kind of hardware that the Turks have. So they're quite vulnerable.
Turkey did not take long to launch that offensive, targeting YPG positions throughout the area, a combination of artillery and airstrikes. What do the Kurds do? Do they pull back and now mount a guerrilla campaign? As you said, they just simply don't have the armed power to stand straight up to Turkey.
That's what I think almost everyone who's looking at this will expect of the YPG. They have held territory throughout the long Syrian conflict, but one expects that there's no possible way that they can confront the Turkish military head on. So they'll do what their Turkish cousins have done, which is to undertake a guerrilla campaign. It's important to point out that the YPG, the Syrian Kurdish Fighting Force, which has formed the core of the Syrian Democratic Forces, which has been the partner of the United States in the conflict in Syria and the primary ground forces in the fight against the Islamic State, is connected to a Turkish Kurdish terrorist organization called the Kurdistan Workers Party, known more commonly by its Turkish acronym PKK. And the PKK has been fighting a guerrilla-style campaign against Turkey since the mid-1980s. There's every reason to believe that the YPG will do the very same thing to confront Turkey's invasion of northern Syria. There's a significant amount of risk for Turkey in this. As I pointed out, they have been confronting the PKK for the better part of the last 35 or 36 years. Now they are confronting a group that is directly linked to the PKK, which surely has learned from the PKK's experience within Turkey.
Do you see the PKK stepping up attacks inside Turkey now?
I think it's entirely possible, and one of the grave risks that the Turks will confront as they remain in northern Syria. From the Turkish perspective, there really is no difference between the PKK and the YPG, and to some extent, they're not entirely wrong. The YPG was stood up with the help of the PKK. They share personnel. They have similar types of worldview. So it has every incentive, the PKK has every incentive to widen the battlefield and bring it home to Turkey, which is Turks have confronted PKK violence that has waxed and waned over a very long time. It would be a real tragedy for Turkey's population centers to be targeted in this way. But it's a real threat.
Turkey's President Erdogan has wanted to go after the YPG for quite some time. What is his end game here? What does he need to see to declare this operation a success?
Well, Erdogan's been under a significant amount of political pressure about Syrian refugees in the presence of the YPG up close to Turkey's border. There's about 3.5 million Syrian refugees in Turkey, and as the Turkish economy has faltered, they have become quite unpopular among Turks. And Erdogan is under pressure to resettle Syrian refugees back in their own countries. That's part of the reason for this incursion. It's to carve out a zone of influence in which to push Syrian refugees in Turkey back into Syria. The other reason is, as I pointed out, the threat that Turks perceive from the YPG, and for the Turkish military to go in and to destroy the YPG would be obviously politically popular and keep Turks on the on their side of the border safe from the YPG. Although the number of incidents that are specifically YPG attacks on the Turkish side of the border are relatively small, if you don't make a distinction between the YPG and the PKK, those numbers obviously go up.
Erdogan is threatening to turn loose those Syrian refugees into Europe if the EU doesn't acquiesce on the offensive. Do you think that he's serious? And is Europe truly afraid of this move? And does that take away any of Europe's leverage with Turkey?
I do think he's actually serious. This has been, and it actually does not matter whether he's bluffing or not, because this is something that frightens European leaders almost more than anything else at this point. It's no secret that the presence of large numbers of refugees in Europe have had a profound effect on European politics and, in fact, European stability. The UK, Britain, as the British fight over Brexit, it has become a country that has become unstable. There were right-wing political groups, far-right political groups in Europe before the Syrian refugee crisis, but they never scored the kind of political gains that they did since large numbers of refugees began appearing in Europe. So the Europeans are deathly afraid of this. They have been paying the Turkish government to keep refugees in Turkey, and Erdogan has used them over and over again as a point of leverage to tamp down on European criticism of whether it's his authoritarianism or now his military incursion into northern Syria.
Erdogan, under tremendous political pressure, how do you think the average Turk feels about this move into Syria? Is there support for what Erdogan's doing?
I think it is broadly popular. And for those who do not support it and voice their concern and criticism of it, there is they will be prosecuted. More than 75 people have been picked up by the Turkish police for openly criticizing this incursion. So it is likely to be broadly popular so long as it's limited and the number of Turkish casualties remains limited. But as I said before, the risk is that Turkey commits military force to Syria. The YPG and its PKK partners undertake a guerrilla campaign, and Turkey becomes caught in Syria fighting an asymmetric battle. That, over a period of time, could undermine the political support for what the Turks are calling Operation Peace Spring.
President Trump likes to talk about the defeat of the ISIS caliphate in Syria, but the Syrian Democratic Forces, primarily led by Kurdish forces, as you mentioned earlier, were in charge of some of those ISIS prison camps, and we've already gotten reports that ISIS fighters have conducted attacks in Raqqa and the Homs Desert in eastern Syria, killing up to 24 Assad regime soldiers. Does this help put ISIS on the comeback trail in Syria?
Well, ISIS is never actually defeated. It has been battered with the help of the YPG in Syria. There were upwards of 90,000 ISIS fighters and their families in makeshift prisons in northeastern Syria. And as YPG fighters are drawn away from these makeshift prisons to confront the Turks, the chances are greater that these ISIS fighters will slip out. It's not as if the YPG is, you know, opening the doors to these prisons and allowing people to run out. Of course, ISIS is a threat to them as well, but they just don't have the manpower if they're going to confront this Turkish invasion as well. So it stands to reason that this will give some amount of new life to the Islamic State, which has never really been defeated in the way that the president has portrayed it.
Early reports had Turkey bombing the border town of Kobani, which was a symbol of Kurdish resistance when it was besieged by the Islamic State in 2014. Seems rather fitting given the turn of events for the Kurds.
Indeed, it is fitting. And during the Islamic State siege on Kobani in 2014, Turkish forces on the Turkish side of the border, this gives you a sense of how close Kobani is to the Turkish border, were within sight of Kobani and could have moved in to assist the Kurds and relieve them during this siege that the Islamic State undertook. Yet they remained on the Turkish side of the border and did not offer any help. And what that really did was it drove home the point that the Turks were ambivalent about the fight against the Islamic State. One, because the Islamic State and Turkey had a common enemy, factions of the Syrian Kurds in northern Syria, and because Turkey gave priority to fighting Kurdish nationalism in Syria over fighting the Islamic State.
You're listening to The Crisis Next Door. I'm Jason Brooks, and we're talking about the Turkish offensive against the Kurds in northern Syria with Stephen Cook, and Eni Enrico Mattei Senior Fellow for Middle East and Africa Studies at the Council on Foreign Relations. The Kurds have reportedly reached out to Damascus and Moscow in the face of the Turkish onslaught. Will Erdogan be willing to deal with Assad and Putin on this? Erdogan has not hid his disdain for Assad over the years. Turkey's relationship with Russia has been fraying over the inability of Turkey to prevent rebel attacks on Russian and regime positions in the northern rebel enclave of Idlib.
Yeah, there has been tension between Turkey and Russia, but overall, the relationship between those two countries has drawn closer, in part because of the situation in Syria. The Turks have coordinated with Russia and Iran in trying to find some type of solution there. Turkey has recently purchased advanced Russian air defense systems that has caused considerable tension with the United States and Turkey's NATO allies. So it is clear that the Turks want to coordinate with the Russians on this, and they likely will be able to coordinate with the Russians on this. That doesn't necessarily mean that there's a tremendous amount of trust between the two countries on specifically the issue of the Kurds, because, of course, Russia has also supported the YPG. When it comes to the Assad regime, I think it's highly unlikely that the Turks will want to deal with Assad or that Assad will want to deal with the Turks. There was a time in the mid-2000s that Recep Tayyip Erdogan, the president of Turkey, was a leading patron of Bashar al-Assad. That ended, of course, when Assad militarized the Syrian uprising and Syria became a killing field, pushing many Syrian refugees into Turkey. One should expect that the Assad regime will do what it can to support the YPG, not because they share political goals. Of course, the YPG and its allies in northern Syria want to carve out an independent state in northern Syria, but because there's a confluence of interest between the YPG and the Assad regime at this very moment, which is to bloody the Turks as much as possible. The Syrian regime has already criticized the Turkish invasion as an egregious violation of Syria's sovereignty, and so I think it's a natural place for the YPG leadership to go to see what kind of support they can get from the Assad regime, even if it is limited.
Do you think Assad would agree to a Kurdish enclave in northeastern Syria in exchange for a Kurdish buffer against the Turks?
Whatever the Assad regime and the Kurds might agree on will be an agreement of the moment that no one actually has any intention of keeping. So even if there is some sort of dramatic announcement along these lines, no one should put much stock in it. One of the problems is, and one of the problems that the United States has had in northern Syria, in dealing with the Turks, and dealing with the YPG, and dealing with all the different actors, is that everybody is lying to the United States as they pursue their own particular interests. Of course, the YPG shares America's interest in destroying the Islamic State, but they do have every intention to try to establish their own political system and their own autonomous zone, or even a state in northern Syria.
Just no honesty on the battlefield. One can imagine a fair amount of celebrating in Moscow and Tehran at President Trump's move. Does this further clear a path to those countries' influence over Syria and the Middle East?
Well, certainly as the United States either redeploys or reduces its footprint in Syria, it is a benefit to Russia and Iran. First, when it comes to Iran, the United States has redeployed. It hasn't completely withdrawn. Again, it advances the Iranian interest of rescuing the Assad regime and then ultimately wanting to establish a land bridge between Iran and the Mediterranean through which it can supply its proxies to do malevolent things in the area around in Lebanon and challenge Israel. For the Russians, the United States reducing its presence in northern Syria is allows the Russians, who are already kingmakers in Syria, to really act with impunity there. Everybody now has to seek Moscow out to pursue their interests in Syria with relatively little regard for the United States. The United States has been trying to revive what's called the Geneva process, which was to seek a political solution to the Syrian conflict. Nobody quite believes that there's going to be this political solution where the Assad regime, you know, reforms itself out of power, agrees to elections, and agrees to ultimately leave the country. But it was a forum in which the United States can gain a certain amount of leverage and deny the Assad regime funds for reconstruction, deny regime cronies from getting wealthy over the war. By the president's determination to get out of Syria and at least in the moment redeploy in Syria, it reduces whatever limited leverage the United States had.
Israel has been vocally supportive of the YPG in Syria. Do you think that Tel Aviv will get even more active? It's already been very active across the skies in Syria and Lebanon, trying to prevent that Shiite crescent taking place from Iran to Lebanon.
Yeah, the Israelis have been engaged in a shadow war against Iran in Syria. They've been hammering the Syrians and Syrian positions over and over and over again. They have been quite critical of the Turkish incursion. The Israeli Prime Minister, his chief rival within the Likud party and other Israeli politicians have been quite vocal on social media and criticizing the Turks. I think we can put that in the category right now of essentially trolling the Turks, with whom the Israelis have very, very difficult relations. I suspect that the YPG will get support from other regional actors, though I also suspect the Israelis won't. If the Israelis are involved, they won't make their involvement known publicly, and that would be to, you know, if they chose to support the YPG, they'll do it through third parties rather than directly themselves.
Trump calls Turkey's invasion a bad idea and warned Ankara that the U.S. would hit Turkey's economy if it does anything out of what they should be doing. Do you think he's serious?
Well, the president did use the economic tools at his disposal, sanctions, his bully pulpit, his Twitter feed, during the summer of 2018 to undermine the value of the Turkish lira, which had already been sliding in value, over Turkey's continued imprisonment of an American pastor from North Carolina. Ultimately, those economic tools put tremendous pressure on the Turkish leadership as the Turkish economy continued to falter. And a number of months later, that pastor, a guy named Andrew Brunson, was released. So the president has done it before. The question, though, that I think is in everybody's minds, what is off-limits? The president hasn't defined that. He said if Turkey does anything that's off limits, he will quote-unquote totally destroy the Turkish economy. No one quite knows what exactly that means.
The Kurds have been allied with the U.S. in the fight against ISIS. Now they're calling Americans traitors for leaving them to the Turks. If you're an American ally elsewhere in the world, should you also be worried?
I would certainly be worried, and that it's become a pattern. This is not the first time that the United States has double-crossed the Kurds. That dates back to the 1970s when we first took advantage of the Kurds and then left them to suffer at the hands of a more powerful neighbor. But certainly, recent events would suggest to American allies in the Middle East, that essentially they're on their own. The Kurds have been left to confront the Turkish military just a couple of weeks after what is believed to be an Iranian attack on Saudi crude processing facilities. The American response to that attack, which was a bold, courageous, and damaging attack, was limited in nature at best. And I think that these two events reinforce for American allies in the region, or would-be allies and friends around the world, that when the United States comes knocking and wants your help for something and makes commitments to you, the United States may not be good to its word.
An unpredictable world getting even more unpredictable. Stephen, thank you so much for joining us on The Crisis Next Door.
Always a pleasure, Jason.
We've been joined by Stephen Cook, Eni Enrico Mattei Senior Fellow for Middle East and Africa Studies at the Council on Foreign Relations. Thanks for listening to The Crisis Next Door. I'm Jason Brooks. Till next time.
The Crisis Next Door with host Jason Brooks is produced weekly.
If you have any thoughts for Jason, email him at tcndpodcast@kcbsradio.com. Again, that's tcndpodcast@kcbsradio.com.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.